Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Easter versus Passover when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? It's obvious that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions, and they've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We Americans have made them part of our national psyche. And this is a very radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware that your daughter cannot receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, or natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, area code 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of Easter. We took a look at the Passover in Exodus 12, then we took a look at Easter. Now, in the New Testament, there's quite a little story here about Passover, and believe it or not, I mentioned the word Easter appears in Acts 12:4. It's a corruption. It's a mistranslation in the King James translation. It's translated from the Greek word pascha, or pascha, P-A-S-H, or P-A-S-H-A, I believe it is, pascha. The King James translators wanted to do you a favor. They knew you practiced Easter, and they didn't want to disappoint you, so they put Easter in the Bible. They had to corrupt it and mistranslate it to do it, but they did it for you. You ought to be grateful. Now, many people are going to write me letters, so you can save your email and save my time and save yours. And don't send me a letter and tell me now that the law of God is nailed to the cross with Jesus and that it's taken out of the way and that you don't have to practice this anymore. I'm fully familiar with that argument. And as we say in the judicial circles, I dissent from that opinion. I do not subscribe to that view. Now, if you subscribe to it, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Now, for the rest of us over here, when we talk about the New Testament, oftentimes Christians will say, well, I follow the New Testament, I just reject the Old. I remember a Jehovah's Witness came here one time, and It was hotter than a blue blaze of hell. It must have been the middle of July. And I came out of the house one Saturday morning going out to milk the cow. And there he was, standing right in my front yard. Here was a big, tall stranger wearing a suit and a white shirt and a necktie in the middle of July. It must have been 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean, just walking from the house to the barn would work up a sweat. And this guy, he's standing there, and he had his little attaché case with him. And right away, I said to him, I said, "Well, you must want to see me awful bad to have to walk in here, because it was on the old road for you old students. And I mean, we used to come down 609, and you had to go through the woods, down the hill, and up the slope, you know, up Newman Slope. Well, let me tell you, that was a bad road. Well, he spun out on Newman Slope, and he had to walk the last half mile or so up here to the house in July, carrying his attaché case. Well, come to find out, he was a Jehovah's Witness. And so I told him, I said, "Well, sit down here, son. You must want to see me awful bad to walk in here like this." He said, "I do." He wanted to save me. He failed. But he wanted to save me, and I thanked him for that. And we got to chit-chatting a little bit, and I asked him, I said, "Well, do you people practice the law?" I was kind of curious about these JWs. And he says, "Oh, yeah. Yeah, we practice all the law of the New Testament." And I asked him about the Sabbath. He said, "No, I didn't do the Sabbath because everybody else does Sunday, so they do Sunday because everybody else does." I thought that was pretty good. He knew which day the Sabbath was, and he knew about the Sabbath. I said, "Do you practice the Ten Commandments?" He held up his fingers, nine. They practice nine commandments. I said, Let me guess. Which commandment you don't practice? It's the fourth." And he said, "Yep, that's right." And that guy knew. Now, we got to chit-chatting a little bit, and he said to me that they practice all the laws of the New Testament. They don't practice the laws of the Old Testament, because they've been abolished, nailed to the cross with Jesus. So I've heard that story, I've heard that argument before. So, in Matthew 4, verse 4, might jot this down, boys and girls, Matthew 4:4. Jesus said, "Man doesn't live by bread only, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." Now, that's a direct citation from Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. So, Moses wrote it down first. Man doesn't live by bread only, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Jesus cited it in Matthew 4:4, and Luke cited it. Luke, in Luke 4, verse 4. Matthew 4:4, and Luke 4, verse 4. Now, let's understand something. When Jesus uttered those words, "Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God," the book of Matthew and the book of Luke hadn't been written yet. Think about that. See, when Jesus told Matthew and Luke, when Jesus said, "Matthew, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God," the book of Matthew hadn't been written yet. You understand that? He cited it from the Old Testament. Jesus didn't know that the Old Testament had been abolished and done away with. Goes to show you what he knows about religion, huh? Dummy. And he says, "Don't think that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill." Then he went on to say, "If you break one of these least commandments, I'll call you least in the kingdom of heaven." Well, I just wanted to point out to you that it looks like to me that the Passover is a little heavier duty commandment, seeing how it deals with a couple of holy days, a couple of Sabbaths, for which the death penalty ascribes to the Sabbath breakers. Did you know that? Sabbath breaking is a capital felony. Eating pig isn't. Hell, you'd be better off to go down to the store and buy yourself a bottle of pickled pig's feet and bring them home and eat them. That's not a capital felony. Sabbath breaking is. And you got these seven annual Sabbaths, of which the Passover and days of unleavened bread are kind of entwined, you know. Two holy days there. So that I'd bring that to your attention. Now, Jesus, in the New Testament, practiced the Passover. So flip over here with me to Matthew 26, verses 1 through 30. I'll just read through this story here for you. You could read it for yourself, but I got an hour to kill, so follow along, would you? It came to pass, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, that he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days is the feast of Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of all the people unto the place of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and they consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him." Yeah, they wanted to take Jesus and kill him. These are the religious people. That's why I've said, you want to stay away from these religious folks because they are dangerous. Just take a look at them over in Iraq. I mean, those guys are religious, blowing themselves up and anybody that's around them. And they're not selective either. They're not just killing Americans. Hell, they kill their fellow Muslims because their fellow Muslims are kind of like Christians. You know, they get Catholic Christians and Protestant Christians. Well, you got these Shiite Christians and you got Sunni Christians. I mean, you got these Shiite Muslims and Sunni Muslims, and they're killing each other. That's why I keep telling you, stay away from religious people or you'll get hurt. Well, Jesus, you know, he was messing around with these religious people. Jesus wasn't very religious. He was pretty lawful. He was very concerned about practicing law. He wasn't very religious. He wasn't turning around 3 times and shaking bat's knuckles under the full moon. He wasn't teaching his little kiddies over there about great humongous eggs falling into the Euphrates River and turning into the goddess Venus and dying Easter eggs. And he wasn't involved in religion. He was involved in law. Again, kind of an odd guy. But the religious guys around him, they didn't like that, and they wanted to kill him. Religious people are like that. Religious people are criminals, and they kill people, and they believe in all kinds of crazy superstitions. That's why scientists kind of reject religion. Now, they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people. So when Jesus was in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, there came to him a woman having an alabaster box of very precious ointment, and she poured it on his head as he sat at meat. But when his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying, "To what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much and given to the poor." So when Jesus understood it, he said to them, "Well, why do you trouble this woman? You know, she's wrought a good work upon me. For you have the poor always with you, but you only have me with you. But not always, you're not going to have me with you always. I'm just here for a short time. For in that she has poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. So truly I say to you that wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also this that this woman has done be told for a memorial to her." Wasn't that just special? So here's Jesus, and she did this neat thing, And she poured this alabaster on him, and she said, "You know, I'm just a poor working girl, you know, working here in the brothel." And I think she was a whore, if I remember right. And you know, Jesus had kinder words, and he had better things to say about whores than he ever did about a preacher. If you've got a good word in the Bible that Jesus ever had for a preacher, would you send that on to me and let me know what it is? Yeah, on numerous occasions, he had some pretty good words for you know, thus low-down guys, truck drivers, and longshoremen, and prostitutes. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said to them, "Well, what will you give me? And I'll deliver him to you." And they covenanted, they contracted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time, he sought opportunity to betray him. Now, the first day of the first of unleavened bread... No, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus. They said to him, "Well, where will you that we prepare to eat the Passover?" Now, that's kind of a bad translation there. The Passover comes before the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And if you look at this in the original, it says at the first, not the first day. It's at the first of the feast. So before the feast began, You know, they said, well, where do you want us to prepare the Passover? And he said, well, go into the city to such a man and say to him, well, the master saith, my time is at hand, and I will keep the Passover. Did you get that? Here's Jesus says, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover. This isn't Jesus saying, hey, I'm going to practice Easter in the Easter parade, or I'm going to be coloring and dyeing eggs. I said, I'd share that with you. Jesus is keeping the Passover at your house with my disciples. And his disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Notice that they didn't go out here to get a ham now so that they could have ham dinner on Sunday afternoon. I've got to tell you a little story here. This girl one time was over in Duncan, Oklahoma at Heritage Library and delivering a series of lectures over there. And this lady came over to me, a young woman, and she said, well, Mr. Gordon, is it true that you practice the dietary laws? And I said, yes, that's true. I practice the dietary laws. And she said, oh, that must be so embarrassing. And I thought, what the hell is embarrassing about the dietary laws? And I asked for a little clarification. I said, what do you mean they're embarrassing? She says, well, let's suppose that you, on Sunday afternoon, were invited over to the minister's home for lunch or supper, and they served ham. Wouldn't you take just a little bit of ham to be sociable? And I thought about it for a second, and I said, well, let's suppose that you come over to my house on Sunday afternoon, and I'm serving baked wharf rat. Would you be so rude that you wouldn't take just a little bit and eat it to be sociable with me? And she paused and she said, oh, I see what you mean. You know, it's the old story of, well, did you want to be a full-fledged whore, or did you just want to be a little bit of a whore? You know, you either practice the law or you don't, and if you don't practice it, why be a hypocrite about it? Just get after it. Well, anyway, the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Now, when the even was come, notice evening, he sat down with the 12, and as they did eat, he said, well, truly unto you, truly I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me. And they were exceedingly sorrowful, and they began every one of them to say, well, Lord, is it I? And he answered and said, well, he that dips his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. So the Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe unto that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had not been born. Would have been better for Judas if he had never been born. That's what clues me in that he's probably going into the lake of fire. Then Judas, when he betrayed him, answered and said, the one that betrayed him answered and said, well, Master, is it I? And Jesus said to him, well, you've said. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread, and he blessed it, and he broke it, and he gave it to his disciples, and he said, take, eat, this is my body. And he took the cup, and he gave thanks, and he gave it to them, saying, drink you all of it, for this is the blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out unto the Mount of Olives. So I want you to notice here that there's nothing said in this story about the foot washing. It's John that tells us about the foot washing, but Matthew tells us about the bread, the wine, and the song. Four things here. Now, Jesus doesn't tell you what to do right here, but he does tell you that he was sitting here at dinner. Now, why are you people going to church and doing this bread and wine thing without the song and without the foot washing? And why do you call that communion instead of the Last Supper? And how come you don't do this just like Jesus did? You know, on the Passover, the night of the Passover, you do this Last Supper. And then on the Passover day, you kill the lamb, and then on the first day of unleavened bread, you eat the lamb and keep it as a holy day. I'm just pointing out that Jesus said we ought to live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, and boys and girls, Exodus 12 proceeds out of the mouth of God. Just thought I'd share that with you. Mark has a little something to add to the story. And this is in Mark chapter 14, 1 through 26. After 2 days was the feast of Passover and of unleavened bread. So notice in Matthew's account, he said, it was the first of unleavened bread. Now Mark clears this up. It was 2 days before the Passover. That's why I pointed that out when I read Matthew, was it wasn't a very good translation. But it's a little clearer here. After 2 days was the feast of Passover and of unleavened bread, and the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might take him by craft and put him to death. But they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar of the people. And being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious, and she brake the box and poured it on his head. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, well, why was this waste of the ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor. And they murmured against her. And Jesus said, let her alone. What are you bothering her for? She's wrought a good work on me. For you have the poor with you always, and whensoever you will, you may do them good. But me you have not always. He goes on to say, she's done what she could. She has come aforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Truly I say unto you that wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she has done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her. Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went unto the chief priests to betray him unto them. And when they heard it, they were glad, and they promised to give him money. And he sought how he might conveniently betray him. And the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, where wilt thou that we go and prepare that thou mayest eat the Passover? Well, now Matthew and Mark both have kind of an obscure description here. The King James translators, keep in mind, never practiced the Passover days of unleavened bread. Now remember, the first thing that happens is the Last Supper, which occurs immediately after sundown on the 13th, because the 14th begins when the sun goes down. Last Supper was held at the very beginning of the 14th day of the first month. Jesus, about 11 o'clock that night, or about midnight, is taken. Remember, he was taken captive. Then, the next day, they beat him up and they work him over, and they kill him about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is the time for the Passover lamb to be killed and cooked. And then, the Passover lamb is eaten at the end of the 14th day. Immediately after sundown on the 14th begins the 15th day. So the Passover lamb is actually eaten on the 15th. And the first day of unleavened bread is that 15th day. Lasts for 7 days. All right. So, a little bit of an obscure translation here. Look it up in the original or in an interlinear and it'll straighten it out for you. And the first day, it should be then at the first or at the beginning of unleavened bread when they killed the Passover, his disciples said to him, where wilt thou that we go and prepare and that you may eat the Passover? And he sent forth two of his disciples, and he said to them, well, go into the city, and there shall you meet a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him. And wheresoever he shall go, say you to the good man of the house, the master saith, where is the guest chamber, where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? You notice that? Jesus, here's Matthew and Mark, both. They're preparing the Passover, the days of unleavened bread. I mean, these guys aren't practicing Easter, boys and girls. This is the New Testament. This isn't, you know, this is what you guys can sink your teeth into. See, you've already rejected the Old Testament. Okay, so knock out, forget about Exodus 12. Well, what are you going to do with Matthew and Mark? Oh, I know. You're going to go have communion. Where in hell did you get communion? Can you show me communion here out of this story? This isn't communion, boys and girls. This is the Last Supper. And a little later on, we're going to see, he says, this do in remembrance of me. How come we're not doing this in remembrance as a memorial for the sacrifice of the Messiah? He goes on to say, he says, then the Master, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. There make ready for us. And his disciples went forth, and they came into the city, found as he had said, and made ready the Passover. And in the evening he cometh with the 12, and as they sat and did eat, Jesus said, truly I say unto you, one of you which eats with me shall betray me. And they began to be sorrowful, and to say unto him one by one, is it I? And another said, is it I? And he answered and said unto them, it is one of the 12 that dippeth with me in the dish. The Son of Man indeed goeth, as it is written of him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. Here's another clue now that this is leavened bread. He said, he that dippeth with me, the sop in the gravy. You ever done that? Have you ever tried to soak up gravy with a matzo's cracker? That's kind of stupid. What you do is you sop up gravy with your French bread. Now remember, the Passover day is not a day of unleavened bread. These are not 8 days of unleavened bread. It's 7 days of unleavened bread. So when you eat the Last Supper, that's not the Passover. The Last Supper is not the Passover. The Passover is the lamb that is eaten on the 15th day. It's cooked on the 14th day at the very end of the day. But it's eaten on the 15th. This Last Supper is eaten at the very beginning of the 14th day, right after sundown on the 13th. Aha! The plot thickens, boys and girls. And as they did eat, Jesus took bread, and he blessed, and he broke that bread, and he gave it to them. If you look up this word, bread, you'll find out it's leavened bread. Everywhere that you see unleavened bread, it means just that. And where you see the word bread, it's leavened bread. And if it's to be unleavened, it'll tell you unleavened. So he blessed it, and he broke it, and he gave it to them, and he said, take, eat, this is my body. And he took the cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank of it. And he said to them, this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for you, for many. Truly I say to you, I will drink no more of the fruit of the vine until that day that I drink it new in the kingdom of God. And when they sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. So there you have them singing the hymn, doing the bread, and doing the wine. So Matthew did the bread and wine and the song. And here's Mark doing the bread, wine, and the song. Where does the foot washing come in? Foot washing. Well, don't give up on me yet. Luke 22, verses 1 through 20. Now the feast of unleavened bread drew nigh, which is called the Passover. Now notice here that Luke clarifies a little bit. This feast of unleavened bread, which is called the Passover, and the chief priests and scribes sought how they might kill him, and they feared the people, and they entered Satan into Judas, surnamed Iscariot, being of the number of the 12, and he went his way, and he communed with the chief priests and captains how they might betray him unto them. And they were glad, and they contracted with him and gave him money, and he promised, and he sought opportunity to betray him unto them in the absence of the multitude. Then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed. And he sent Peter and John, saying, go and prepare us the Passover, that we may eat. And they said unto him, well, where will you go that we prepare? And he said to them, well, behold, when you are entered into the city, there shall a man meet you, bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house where he enters in. And you shall say unto the good man of the house, the Master saith unto thee, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he shall show you a large upper room furnished, there make ready. And they went, and they found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. I know a lot of times people think, wow, that's really magic. Did it ever occur to anybody that the Messiah had already made preparations for this last Passover 6 months in advance. And he said, go into town, and when you see this guy, he'll take you up to the place that I've already rented. I didn't see any particular magic there, but I know that the Messiah had prepared for the Passover. Remember, this is going to be his last Passover, because the Messiah was sacrificed in the midst of the week, which is what Isaiah said, which is on a Wednesday. So the Messiah died on Wednesday. The first holy day, the Sabbath, is Thursday, the annual holy day. They rested Friday, or they bought their provisions and rested the Saturday, which was the Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath. And then Sunday morning when they got out to the tomb, he was risen. Take a look at the text. He was risen. Past tense. Now figure it out. Number one, he died Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock is one day. Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock is 2 days. Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock is 3 days. He said, I will be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. Christians have him buried on Friday, Good Friday. He's in the ground on Sabbath, and he is resurrected Sunday morning. The Scripture does not say he was resurrected Sunday morning. The Scripture says that Sunday morning he was risen. Past tense. Which is exactly correct. He was risen Saturday afternoon. That's when the resurrection occurred, was a Sabbath resurrection, Saturday afternoon. Those people didn't go out there till Sunday morning. When they got out there Sunday morning, he was gone. The stone was already rolled back. When they got there, the tomb was open, he was gone. Now when the hour was come, he sat down with the 12 apostles with him, and he said unto them, with desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you, before I suffer. For I say unto you, I will not any more eat thereof, until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God. And he took the cup, and he gave thanks, and he said, take this, and divide it among yourselves. Because I say unto you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine, until the kingdom of God shall come. So he took bread, and he gave thanks, and broke it. He gave it unto them, saying, this is my body which is given for you. This do in remembrance of me. Likewise also the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood which is shed for you. No mention of the song, no mention of the foot washing. All right, but now we've got two of the apostles, Matthew and Luke, that mention the bread, wine, and the song. You got Matthew and Mark, bread, wine, and the song. Now we got Luke comes in here. He doesn't mention the song, and he doesn't mention the foot washing. But in John, chapter 13, verses 1 through 17, which we will take up as soon as we get back with this mid-course reminder, I'll show you that now we're going to do a song right along with it. But let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Passover. Passover versus Easter. Here in the New Testament, we find the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all have a story about this last Passover, the Passover that has given rise to this doctrine in church called communion. Jesus did not stand up there and have these 12 guys walk by while he stuck a little piece of unleavened wafer into their mouths and then gave them a little chunk of wine to drink. He was sitting at a meal that's commonly called the Last Supper. And we're going to see here in John, he says, "This do in remembrance of me." There's four things that he added to these 53 things that I told you about in Exodus 12. And he said, now, in addition to Exodus 12 and the 53 things that we all do every Passover, I got four more thingies over here that I want you to do. And I want you to do this in remembrance. Now, here it is in John 13, verses 1 through 17. And John words it like this. He says, "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God, and he went back to God, he rose from supper, and he laid aside his garments, and he took a towel, and he girded himself. And after that he poured water into a basin, and he began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe their feet with the towel wherewith he was girded. When he came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? And Jesus answered and said to him, What I do, you knowest not now, but you shall know hereafter. And Peter said to him, Well, you shall never wash my feet. And Jesus answered him, and he said, If I wash you not, you have no part with me. Pretty strong words. He said, If I don't wash your feet, you don't have any part with me. Sucker. I added that word sucker. It's not in the original. So, Peter, he kind of changed his tune a little bit, and he said, well, Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. And Jesus said to him, well, he that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit. And you are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him. Therefore said he, You are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet and had taken his garments and was set down again. Now notice this, he washed their feet. And then he sat down again. He was at the Last Supper. Boys and girls, we are at a meal. We are at a supper. when this event transpires. We're not in church going by the priest while he's sticking wafers in your mouth. So after he had washed their feet and he had taken his garments and he was set down again, he said to them, "Know you what I have done to you? You call me Master and Lord, and you say, 'Well, for so I am.' If I, then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you." Now let me break in here for a second. Do you remember I showed you this the other day? Let's see if I can find my Bible here. Here it is. Over in Luke chapter 6. See if I can find that here. Be patient with me. I'm just a tired old plumber here, but Luke 6:46. Look at this. I got it marked in my Bible. I took a yellow mark and pen here. It says in Luke 6:46, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" Why do you Christians call Jesus Lord and do not the things which he says? Now, here at the Last Supper, now pay attention now, little grasshoppers. Listen up, boys and girls. He said, "You call me Master and Lord, and you say, 'Well, for so I am.' If I, then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, Christian, you also ought to wash one another's feet, because I've given you an example that you ought to do as I've done to you." Now, when was the last time you heard of a Christian washing some other Christian's feet? No, they don't do that. They go to church on Sunday and they take communion, which is fine. That's religion, and you certainly have a First Amendment right to freedom of religion. But don't ever say that you got that out of the Bible. And if you can show me communion in the Bible, would you? Send me an email, would you? Show me where Jesus lined everybody up and stuck bread in their mouth and washed it down with a little grape juice. Now he went on to say, he said, "Truly, truly, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. Now if you know these things, happy are you if you do them." If you do them. I know it's a wild leap of faith here, but have you ever heard of anybody actually doing what Christ told you to do or following an example that Christ set? There was another thing here I wanted to point your attention to. Did you notice that Jesus said that he loved them to the end? Do you know what love is? I hear religious people constantly talking about the love of God or the love of Christ. They get kind of wavery in their voice, you know. In 1 John, the same guy, John, Big John, I call him Big John, I don't know how big he was, but you remember Big John, the guy that was in that song. Well, over here in John, written by this guy, the Apostle John, and there's three little letters over here, 1 John, 2 John, and 3 John. Well, in 1 John 5, in verse 3, there's a definition of the word love. Did you know that? 1 John 5, 3, it says, "By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep His commandments." Now listen up. Verse 3. "For this is the love of God." You want to know what it is? "For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. And His commandments are not grievous." And for you JWs, that includes the fourth commandment. If you actually practiced the Sabbath day on Saturday, it would not be grievous. Well, so said God. Now, of course, you can listen to whoever you want to. Now, the Messiah said you'd be happy if you did them. If you know these things, happy are if you do them. Now, there's the foot washing. So now we got four things here. First thing he did was he washed their feet. Then he did the bread. Then he did the wine. Then they sang a song. Then they went out into the garden. And it was from there that he was taken. And he was seized and taken on the Passover day because Jesus the Messiah was our Passover. Remember that? Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. So said Paul in Corinthians. All right, so the Messiah was the Passover, and that Passover occurred on a Wednesday. And he was in the ground 3 days and three nights, just like he said he was. In fact, he said, I'm going to give you one sign, sucker. You get one sign, jerk. And that is the same sign that you got from Jonah. As Jonah was in the belly of the great fish 3 days and three nights, so shall the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. And the scripture goes on to tell you, are there not 12 hours in a day? Well, how many hours are there in a night? Well, if there's 12 hours in a day and 12 hours in a night, there's 24 hours in a day. Right, boys and girls? 3 days and three nights is 72 hours, not 36. If the Messiah died at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon, then 3 o'clock Saturday is one day. 3 o'clock Sunday is 2 days. 3 o'clock Monday is 3 days. Well, we know that don't work. Because Sunday morning when they got out there, the first day of the week. You ever notice how people identify that in the Bible? The first day of the week. And then they come along and they say, well, the first day of the week is the Sabbath day. That's why we go to church on Sunday. Come on, kids. Let's grow up and get real. Eggs don't fall out of heaven into the Euphrates River and turn into the goddess Venus. 3 days and three nights is 72 hours. From 3 o'clock Friday to 3 o'clock Monday is 3 days and three nights. Jesus was already risen Sunday morning. Past tense. You know, this isn't rocket science. You don't have to have a degree from college to figure this out. You do have to have the code, though, in Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13. Did you notice? Line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. So, the Passover, which appears in the Bible 76 times, it's a little tricky. To code plead out Passover takes a little work. You got to take these 73 places in the Bible. Now, most of you people have computers. And my boy Dirk and my daughter, I don't use the computer. I'm an old man, full of years, and set in my ways. I never used a computer in my life, and I'm going to live to be 110, and I ain't touching one. However, I do hire people who do. I'm kind of like the Amish. You won't catch an Amish man out there running a chainsaw, but you'll find him hiring guys to go cut his firewood. Well, I'm the same way about those computers. Now, you go out here and you go to your Bible bookstore, or you go to your computer store, and you'll find a Bible program. And here's the way my boy does it. I can take the word Passover, he punches it into the computer, and it will print out every place in the Bible where the word Passover appears. And you can do the same thing. Now you've got everything in the Bible about the Passover. Now, put it all together, and you'll see line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little and there a little. And that's what you've got here with the Passover in the four Gospels. You got Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They all tell you a little bit of the story. Now, he said, I've set this as an example for you to follow. Now, boys and girls, some of you out there may want to follow this example. Now, my listener up here in Ohio, who sent me the letter, evidently wants to do this. Says, well, I want to know what the date is. Well, now I gave you the date. Now, what you might want to do if you've never done a Passover before, the first time I did it, I kind of screwed it up, not knowing how to do it in one thing and another. You know, you need a lamb without blemish. It's pretty hard to buy a lamb without blemish. Pretty hard. And the reason for that is that here in America, I can't speak for everybody, but here in America, we dock our sheep. That is, we cut their tails off and we castrate all the males. Now, when you do that, that animal has been blemished. Castrated Passover lambs won't cut the mustard. That's not right. And a lamb that's got his tail cut off, that's not right. Now, come on, guys. You need a lamb without blemish. One time I had a lamb here. I brought him up on the Passover, and he got into a sack of corn, and he bloated. He wasn't dead yet, but we went out to get him on the Passover, and he was just about dead. And I looked at that critter, and I said, now look at this. Here's the Passover lamb, and it's time now to take him over and kill him, and here he is laying on his side, heaving with every breath, just about dead, and a guy was standing there, he says, boy, we better hurry up and kill him or he's going to die. I said, son, that animal is blemished. We're not going to kill that one on the Passover. So I said, all right, boys, let's go out into the field. Let's bring the sheep in. And we brought the sheep in, and we took a lamb out of the flock. Without blemish, and we killed that one. Now, every year, now what I do is I bring up two, sometimes three, and I put them up in the corral. One year I had two or three in the corral, and one of them jumped up on the fence, and I used these Jacob's four-horned sheep, and he got hung up on the fence and broke his horn. Well, boys and girls, that's a blemish. Now, you know, if God... you know, tells you don't use a lamb with a blemish, then he must have told you that for some reason. Now, can you imagine, you know, somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, I went down and got a leg of lamb at the butcher shop, and I brought it home, and I roasted it in the oven. Is that the Passover? All right, let me give you a couple of pointers here. There's 53 things that you need to know. Do you remember Exodus 12? Well, let me just run this one by you here. On the Passover evening, that is, after sunset, which is going to be around 8 o'clock in April, on the 14th day, just as soon as the sun goes down on the 13th day of the month, which this year is going to be the 25th of April. So at the end of the 25th of April, Passover day is on the 26th, we are going to wash one another's feet, pursuant to John 13, 1 through 17. Then we're going to eat unleavened bread, according to Matthew 26, 17 through 29. And then we're going to drink wine, according to Mark 14, 22 through 26. And then we're going to sing a hymn, according to Mark 14, 26. Okay? So we're going to wash one another's feet. We're going to eat unleavened bread. And it's going to be, excuse me, I said unleavened bread. It's leavened bread that you eat on the Passover evening. Not unleavened, it's leavened bread. I'm sorry. Drink the wine and sing a song. Now, on the Passover, for that Passover, that's lamb. And by the way, oftentimes when we have, the Last Supper, we don't eat lamb or mutton on the Last Supper night. You eat lamb or goat for the Passover meal, which is eaten at the end of the 14th, the beginning of the 15th. And that's what's so confusing. You see, a good understanding of all they who do his commandments, but if you don't do his commandments, then you don't have a very good understanding. All right, so on this Last Supper, you should have a big meal. I mean, you know, you should have a big, big blast. Hell, you might have turkey and trimmings. But you want to be sure that you do the bread, the wine, the foot washing, and the song. All right. Now, the next day, you need to put all the leavening out of your house. This is during the daylight portion of the 14th day of the month. Remember now on the Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread, you establish the first month of the year, step one. Then on the 10th day, you take a lamb for each house. And then you need the lamb to figure for two or three families. They can share a lamb. The lamb must be without blemish. The lamb must be male. The lamb must be under 1 year old. It can be a lamb or a goat. You must keep it separated from the flock until the 14th day. And then kill the lamb afternoon on the 14th day. Sprinkle the blood on the lintels and side posts of your doors. Eat all of the flesh of the lamb. The lamb must be eaten with unleavened bread. So remember, when you eat the Last Supper, it's leavened bread, and when you eat the lamb, it's unleavened bread. The lamb must be roasted with fire. The lamb must be eaten with bitter herbs. Now, these bitter herbs are onions and watercress and raw spinach and things like that. So make sure that you eat the lamb with bitter herbs. So you got meat and salad. Do not eat the lamb raw. Do not eat the lamb boiled. Roast the lamb with the head and the intestines in it and the legs on it. Do not break a bone. There can be no leftovers. You have to burn everything when you're through after the meal in the fire. You eat with your clothes on. You eat with your shoes on. You eat with your staff in your hand. So you have to go cut a stick, all you men. Now, you women can eat without a staff in your hand, and your children can sit down. But you men, make sure you're standing with a staff. You eat in haste. You shall keep this feast by a statute forever. And you shall keep this feast from generation to generation. And you shall keep this feast forever. The feast is a memorial. And you must eat unleavened bread for 7 days. And then you must put all of the leavened products out of your house on the 14th day. And the 15th day is a convocation. The 15th day is an assembly. The 21st day is an assembly or a holy convocation. And don't do any work on these two annual holy days. You can prepare food on the two holy days or assemblies, and you must observe these feasts or this feast for 7 days. And then you're to teach this observance to your family's generations. You eat unleavened bread for 7 days, not 8. The 14th day is the day to clean out your house. No leavening is to be found in your house for 7 days. The days of unleavened bread are the 15th through the 21st. This statute applies to everyone and no exceptions, even if you're from Vietnam. You eat no leavened products for 7 days. And you keep this law in your new land, and that includes the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. If you'd like a copy of these Passover duties, just send me a stamped self-addressed envelope, and I will forward that to you. All right, we're about out of time. That's enough for this week. We'll see you back here again tomorrow night. Same time, same station. Remember, this is the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. See you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.